When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Welcome to Fright School. Are you ready? Class is in session.
Welcome back to Fright School. Hello, Joe.
Hi, Joshua.
How you doing?
Ooh, can I get real? Can I get tactile with you? Can I get real?
Sure.
I'm a little on the struggle bus today because I went out last night.
Yeah.
I had a little too much fun last night.
Ah, beverages or?
Beverages, food, herbal refreshment.
All right. Okay, girl. Yes. Partying.
She was definitely, it was very classy. Let's put it that way.
Oh, of course it was. Huh. I'm sure.
No, you know me. I don't really imbibe.
Yeah.
And I was celebrating something yesterday.
Uh-huh.
I was commemorating the 1 year anniversary of my most significant relationship ending. And I went out with...
So far. Most so significant far. Relationship so far. Yes.
Thank you. Are you getting credit for this? We should get some credit for you.
No, I'm just planting the seeds of my no longer talking to you.
Yes.
I just want you to prepare for when you're memorializing that you and I will no longer be.
True, Joshua. But that would also come at either yours or my death. We're in it forever. No, so I went out last night.
Yes. Memorializing loss. This is good. See?
Yes. I was having the loss.
It is important to do that. So go ahead.
And I went to this restaurant that has a speakeasy in the back. So we had tacos in the front. And then we went to a speakeasy in the back. And we sat at the bar and had very tasty cocktails. And it was delightful. And it was the first time in a while, that I did a little edible situation. And then also went out and had very strong, delicious drinks.
Nice.
It was a fun night. I need to take you to the speakeasy, though. We were supposed to go last year, then I got COVID.
Right.
It's the speakeasy that's right next to a cemetery.
Yeah, fun. Yeah. I love all of that. That sounds great. You know, yes. I love a cemetery.
I'm feeling very good, very blessed.
Yes, I'm sure. Did it help to do?
Sure, yeah. Yeah, because I did a little shout out to Ashley, our final girl.
Yeah.
Our only girl, really. I love her so much because I can text her and be like, do you have a cleansing ritual? Do you have a spell for me, my sister in witchery? And she gave me one, and it was a lot of burning of intention or burning of feelings and all of that stuff. And it was actually really good to do because it was cool because as I was writing, so the main thing that you do is like you write the things you're trying to release or cleanse yourself of, either from the person or the experience. And as I was writing it, I was actually finding it a little difficult to write down things because so much has happened in the last year that I've made my peace with it, that I'm not, like, there was a lot that I had already given released that I was like, oh, I guess maybe I don't, maybe these are the last few things. And so that was nice to mark that time.
Yeah, yeah. But it's good to see how much we've grown in the time or how much has changed or the things that could be surprising what does or doesn't come up.
Yeah.
So how cool. Good for you. I'm glad that you had a good time and that it wasn't just like a sad occasion.
In many months, you get a wistful feeling every now and then. What is it? The dual processing model of grief. Sometimes you're on this side and then you immediately jump back over here. And so, but like my therapist, shout out to therapy, everybody. Get some. Get the therapy, girls. He was saying that like the way he approaches grief work is like understanding that grief is always going to be there, but it doesn't have to be there the whole time. And so that has actually been really helpful, because the feelings of grief that I've had over the last year, allowing myself to feel it and to honor it and to just sit with it for a minute has also helped me to release that and move back to the other side of the processing model.
I love that.
I thought you would. I've been watching the duo, but I don't think you need it. I don't think you need
it. Yeah, I'm familiar with it. Yeah, just in general, I think it's always good to try to sit in all situations where we can balance like the logical stuff and the emotional things. Mm-hmm. This is very DBT, you know, the wise mind sort of thing. So that it makes sense. Like some days you're going to be more, you'll be drawn to something, an emotional experience. So I think it's good to honor that, but also not get lost in it. It's always a balancing act. And I do think grief is very omnipresent in life. Life is full of loss. So and it's not a, you know, the five stages of grief or whatever. I'm not totally bought into. I mean, I'm bought into the idea of it, but it comes and goes and it's cyclical. And we find ourselves in different parts of our lives at different stages or in different stages at different parts of our lives in a different order or a different. Yeah. Stuff comes up, especially for me around like special occasions or as I'm like accomplishing things. It's like, oh, my mom's not here. So you just have those moments of you go through the whole process again in a way, because you have to like. There are times I'm like angry that she's not here to witness the things that I'm accomplishing, or I'm sad, or I feel, oh, if I had done this or said that. Yeah. So you find yourselves throughout life always working through the stages.
Sure.
And relationships are hard too, because you grieve what's not, you grieve what was and also what
could have been.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Which is very hard, because that is made up of a ton of inner discourses, because it's not based on a real thing. It's based on what you think would have happened. Anyways.
And it wasn't without our, that's the thing, is that like, I can't even, it's difficult to grieve the potential, because like we were on a downward trend for so long. So it's like we would have had to really build back up all of that. So at a certain point, it's just, it was inevitable. Two things for you. One, and then we can move on from grief. We can move on at this point from grief. Two things. One, the friend I was with, I thought it would also be healing for him as well, because he also recently just ended like a breakup. And one thing that he said to me in the days after his breakup, that the day that he broke up with his ex, his now ex, that later on the ex called him and said something that affected him, really affected me hearing it, was the fact that, oh, the last 9 months of my life have been a waste. Yeah. Which was like, I understand where that comes from, because it's from a place of anger and hurt. But
this is the ex said to...
The ex said to my friend.
Yeah.
And for me, I immediately like, I had to go into that a little bit, because I was like, wow, that is such a, it felt like such a severe thing to say, because even with me about having my relationship being on a downtrend for months and months, I never at one point ever thought that all of those almost 3 years that we were together were a waste.
Yeah.
What is it? Yeah, exactly.
Knowing nothing about why they would feel the necessity to say something like that outside of just wanting to hurt someone.
Yeah.
And that says a lot about the kind of person that they might be and how they value relationships as not as places to maybe as not places to learn something and grow.
Sure.
So I'd be very curious. That part of me, that the therapist mind,
yes,
like wants more information. Like I'm curious about,
let me say more about that.
The dynamics. Uh-huh. But again, that just sounds like just such a hurtful kind of thing to say. Yeah. And just purposefully, because you don't even need to. You could just not talk again or not send any messages.
Yeah. That's the thing, is that pleading or fighting or saying those hurtful things in that moment, what's the point, right? Because yeah. The desire to separate has been expressed.
Yeah, and we've already done that. What was the other thing?
The other thing is do you know the actor Paul Mescal from, what would you know him from? Normal People. He's an Irish actor. He was dating for a while, he was dating, had a very public relationship with the musician Phoebe Bridgers. Hmm. Phoebe Bridger, something like that. Phoebe Bridgers. And so they broke up, and he's been very diligent and
he looks familiar. Yeah.
Yes. He's been very diligent and very, he was in After Sun, which was nominated for an Oscar. I know you don't follow the Oscars, but.
Right.
And so with Paul Mescal, he's working on a current project with, what's the name of the hot priest from Fleabag? I forget his name. He's a very talented Welsh, maybe not Welsh. He's a very talented Irish, I think.
My God, Hot Priest from Fleabag is an actual cool thing that pops up. Andrew Scott,
thank you. Okay. Andrew Scott, who is a very talented English queer actor. They're doing a project together.
Yeah, I absolutely disagree with Hot Priest. But anyways, we all have our tastes.
And he, for the first time, he publicly acknowledged his breakup in an interview recently, Paul Mescal did, where he said that he was on set with Andrew and how it was something that very bleak that was said, but also very true, is the fact that love, you have love for someone, but that's the temporary thing. The thing that's the longer lasting feeling is the grief when that's over, whether it is that they die or the relationship ultimately ends. It's that part is the longer lasting part. And I had to sit with that for a little bit because it's, for whatever reason, it's helping. Paul Mescal said that is helping him a little bit, but I had to sit with that because I'm like, yeah, if it's always there, but I think I've grown to not see it as a negative. It's the grief is a negative. It's it's the remnants of the love that was there or is still there.
Yeah, precisely. Exactly. Grief just proves that you can feel, and you can feel very deeply. Mm-hmm. And that is a good thing. Yeah. And it is the cliche, the price of love. Absolutely. But yeah, I think it is good for us because life is fleeting. And so how we choose to invest our time, how we choose to spend it, who we do it with, grief is the powerful reminder, I feel, of that investment and that just the beauty of life. Yeah. But you know what I like to do when I'm sad is eat as a segue, because Joe.
Yes.
Are you feeling okay? Is it all right? Should we move on?
Oh, yes. I was too.
Joe brought me back a gift from Guam, original Chamorro chip cookies. I love that. Chamorro chip cookies.
Yes.
That's delightful. Chocolate chip, which you can't eat.
No, eat the other one.
Okay. You brought me two different kinds.
Yeah.
Macadamia nut and chocolate chip. But you can't eat these either because you can't have chocolate.
No. They do have. So there is a third flavor that's coconut.
I appreciate
coconut.
You bringing me chocolate one. That's very sweet of you.
Well, no, I'm not going to bring you the ones that I can eat. I'm going to eat those. They have ones that are coconut flavored that.
They look like that cookie crisp.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Pour them in a bowl and eat them with milk.
It's a little AMA moment on the show while we try Joe's cookies.
I had to hand carry those because there was no room in my suitcase.
Wow. I feel really lucky. Those are yummy. I like a crispy.
Yeah.
I'm going to try just the straight. Those were the macadamia in that one, mm-hmm. which were delicious. But I also want to try just the plain
chocolate chip.
Because I love a chocolate chip cookie. Oh, no, I'm tearing the bag.
Yeah, these are the cookies that they're literally made for people who come back from, who visit Guam and need to bring back snacks for the office.
Yeah.
No, that's not their intention. But I feel like that's what I've always done is let me just get a bunch of cookies and
serving size 18 cookies. So.
That's the Chamorro part of Chamorro chip. We want you to eat as many cookies as you possibly can.
Half a day?
Half a day.
Half a day. Half a day. Chamorro chip cookies made exclusively on Guam.
Yes.
From finest, purest ingredients available. Delish. All right. That's what we're That's what we're
plugging. Sponsor us.
Those are really yummy, so thank you for bringing those. I'm going to leave these right here and save them for chewing loudly whenever you're talking.
Yes, I'd not share.
Yes, those are very, very tasty. Thank you. And I love that you had to hand carry them back. That just makes me, like, so happy that you may have been mildly inconvenienced for my...
For your pleasure.
For my pleasure.
I thought that you would like that.
Oh, that is so funny. All righty. Let's see. Anything that we could talk about that's a little happier with our last couple of minutes before we move on to the movie?
So I didn't get to talk about this in a previous episode, but I'm slowly revealing more and more about my trip, right? Mm-hmm. The one thing that I wanted to make sure that I did while I was there was to go to the drag show. So I went to the drag show. It is Diosa, which is the drag house there at Club Icon on Thursday nights at 11:30. And I got to meet some of the queens that were there, and they had delayed. They were doing like a series of four shows once a week that were supposed to be their pride shows, but because of the typhoon, they delayed them to right when I got there, really. This was the second of their series, and it was LGBT Icons. And so I got to watch them do this really fun show. The finale, which was my favorite part, the finale was basically a recreation of Rihanna's Super Bowl halftime show, complete with dancers, and there was like indoor pyrotechnics, which was really fascinating, kind of scary. But it was so nice to be in the queer space with seeing drag, something that I love very dearly, and seeing it on Guam and people participating, and the whole room was packed. I got there an hour and a half early because they started capping people. They reached capacity by an hour before the show.
What is
I really would love
or is
there
this
to
something
be,
that's like put oh.
So when I was a kid, and I only know this because of what was like on the news and in the newspaper, but when I was a kid, there was this long-running pageant called Miss Pacificana. Mm-hmm. And it was just like a bunch of drag queens in a pageant, and they all represented quote-unquote different countries, but they all like they would post their pictures and their names in the paper. And I remember seeing one drag queen's name was Sushi Tofu Sashimi, and like it was a whole thing.
I love
it had gone on for a long time. But again, I don't quite know because I don't know who is or if anyone is writing that kind of queer history of Guam.
Sounds like an idea, Joe.
I know. And as soon as I said it, it's probably going to have to be me. But
when we go, we'll do that when we go. We'll just try to like set up an interview.
Yes, for the 2 weeks, the week and a half that we're there, we'll be like, all right.
Can we write the whole history of drag on Guam?
the drag of Micronesia.
Yes.
The Micronesian drag.
Micronesian. Yes. I love it. I'm glad you got to experience that because it is interesting. Like when I go back home, obviously, it's a very different kind of thing. But to go back to Ohio and just see how much it's grown and changed in that way, going to the gay bars or going out to a club or something, or seeing friends of mine who do drag now or who did drag then, who are now supporting the new drag, it is cool just to see the queer culture that's grown in the last 20-some years.
It's great because it's like the House of Diosa, they're like... there's three trans women in it, and the girls that were performing were all except for one, the skinny legend, all of them were bigger girls too, doing full choreo, splits, kicks, that sort of thing. And for me, I was just living, because I'm like, oh my god, I relate to this in a way that is above just my queer identity but also my cultural identity. Yeah. I think I talked about this when I went back in 2018. They did a drag number to a Polynesian hula song that I remember from childhood. And I was like, oh my God, you can't, that means something to me but it also means something to other people who maybe are looking for that experience.
A few episodes.
You need to know because when you go.
I know.
Yeah.
I'm going to die of heat exhaustion probably.
You're going to die of.
One, mosquitoes.
Yeah, mosquitoes and heat exhaustion. But we will keep you very fed. You will be very fed.
All right. I'm here for that. All right. Let's take a quick break and we'll be back to chat prom night.
Meanwhile, in New Jersey.
So, Marissa, what talking points do you want to hit on in this week's episode?
Well, Jackie, let's talk about how the film addresses the patriarchy. Ooh, and representation of marginalized people. Ooh, ooh, and even philosophical ramifications of good versus evil in horror.
We can point out the triangle boobs, talk about the blood splatter, and, the practical effects. And also the male gaze?
My gaze at the males.
Hi-o! From feminism to fangirling, the Jersey Ghouls cover all the bases of horror from a woman's perspective.
New episodes are uploaded every other Sunday.
Just search Jersey Ghouls to find us on social media and your favorite podcasting app.
All right, welcome back. So this week we are tackling... I don't want to call it... It is a classic of the genre in a way. It's a cult classic. Mm-hmm. I think it's appreciated... probably a little bit more now maybe than it was back in the day. It gets name dropped in a lot of movies. Scream obviously name drops it. So yeah, we're talking about 1980s prom night. Continue with our little kind of sort of back to school theme here for September. I know it's not prom season. I know as soon as like school starts in the fall, people are ready to talk about it and plan prom. So it's okay. We can just... throw this out there. Yeah, 1980, directed by Paul Lynch, written by William Gray. We got Jamie Lee Curtis and Leslie Nielsen. And it's about a bunch of high schoolers who are go to prom and get attacked by a slasher. It's all there in the title, right?
We're done, everyone.
Yeah. So yeah, that's what it's about. It was filmed in Toronto, so this is Canadian. What else? Yeah. Let's just dive in, Joe. What did you think of prom night?
Hold on, I need to go back to the other... I texted you while I was watching it.
Uh-huh.
And the reason why is for this specific reason. I said, I'm struggling to keep all these characters in prom night straight. Why is Leslie Nielsen serious? I'm halfway through this thing and the prom is nowhere to be found. It's all in the day. And it's you get halfway through and they're just getting to prom. That doesn't make any sense to me. This is, again, the promise of the premise is that it's going to be at night and there's going to be a prom. Not it's going to be, not day school, okay?
Right.
It's not school day. It's supposed to be prom night, okay? Yeah. Again, the promise of the premise. The windows had one window, singular, no windows, plural. This, mostly during the day. Biggest complaint is it's mostly during the day.
True, yeah. It's most up to prom.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but
and
like
prom, like the last 20 of the movie.
First of all, I don't know.
Kind of like Carrie.
Like Carrie, yes, but like the thing about this movie is it's maddening because you have to think about like how movies and television have built up the prom to be this big thing.
Right.
Because like now I would not have a date to prom the day that the prom was happening. Like how are these people having dates? Getting their outfits together. Am I just supposed to believe that Jamie Lee Curtis learned all that fucking choreo that day, made it up for disco prom extravaganza, whatever the fuck?
Has a lot of things I love. It's got 30-year-old teenagers.
Yes.
Love that. Although I don't actually think any of them were 30, but they definitely look it.
Well, there's that one scene where they're walking the mom.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, no.
Yeah. So we got 30-year-old teenagers. We have a car exploding, which is always fun. Mm-hmm. A van. Disco dance sequences for I'm still not exactly sure why. And the inexplicably cast and equally confused looking Leslie Nielsen, which I think... what I was reading was this is one of the last like serious roles he did as doing something as a serious. And then it was mostly comedy. So we know him as comedy. It's the same thing. I've talked about this before, the Dexter, the John Lithgow Dexter thing.
Oh, yeah.
So many of us had known him as the weird alien. So seeing him play a serial killer was really jarring. Or John Goodman in 10 Cloverfield Lane. Because it's like we're so used to seeing him as Dan Connor on Roseanne. So it was like very weird. So this is the opposite because we grew up with Leslie Nielsen doing all these like funny movies. And so I didn't really,
I'm looking at his filmography. He was in Forbidden Planet. I did not know that.
Ah.
I only know Forbidden Planet because of Rocky Horror. Hold on. So he did 80 was... Okay, here's the thing. In 1980, he does his first comedic role in Airplane. At the same, that's the same year that Prom Night comes out. Everything else... Then he would go to be in Creepshow.
Oh, I love him in Creepshow.
When were the Naked Gun movies? That's what I
guess Creepshow is serious. It's comic. It's dark horror comedy.
The Naked Gun from the Files of Police Squad, 1988 would be the first Naked Gun movie. And then he would go on. My favorite thing that he's ever done is Father May I in Repossessed.
Yeah, I loved Repossessed growing up. And was it Dracula Dead and Loving
Dracula
It?
Dracula Dead and Loving It.
I remember those when I was a kid. I haven't watched either of those since I was a kid. We should put those on a list and maybe rewatch those. That could be fun. Just as a... Especially with the anniversary of The Exorcist coming up, the 50th anniversary of the release of the original The Exorcist and The Exorcist Believer coming out in October. That could be fun to revisit, Repossessed. But anyways, I know this. You were going to do this. You're just going to try your best to keep us from actually discussing Prom Night.
I did watch the movie. I just, I know.
Again, it's funny because it's like when I watch it, because I've seen it a few times, and I always, like, are we sure it's all on the same day? Is it really just a movie that takes place
because
over? Besides the flashback, because it starts with some home movies of when I was growing up. That should not be as funny as...
I'm sorry, because I had a thought. I was like, this sounds like my nightmare. A bunch of children backing me against the window just saying kill, kill, kill. And it was interminable. I was like, is this the whole movie? Like,
right. And then they all go to prom together.
Yes.
Yeah, no, I love watching it because that, like, literally was how we were as kids. Like, we were always, like, thankfully nobody got seriously injured, like, as, like, growing up, because we definitely probably should have. Because we reenacted, like, horror movies all the time, running around pushing each other off things and, you know, doing all kinds of terrible stuff. I always laugh at the beginning because I'm like, oh, gosh, this kind of reminds me of, like, growing up. And with neighborhood kids, too. We'd get together and make up a scary movie.
Yeah, see, but no one ever sought revenge against you yet, I should say.
Yes. But we also did. I don't have any secret deaths in my past.
They're all public record.
They're all public record, exactly. Yeah, totally threw me off what I was
sorry.
So that's what the film starts with, like, a bunch of kids, like, goofing off, playing around. They accidentally kill one of each other.
Was I really struggling to see the accident of it all? Because I don't know how you could watch that and think it was an accident.
Well, she, like, got up. She was, like, backed up into the window, and then she, like, fell out of it. So, again, I don't know if they were, like, trying to kill her. I just feel maybe we don't get a good... That's what we need here. We need a prequel. We need to know what a little asshole Robin was.
Yes.
And how she done did deserved it.
Not in a big way, but...
That's the Blumhouse remake coming in, like, 2030 for the films, whatever that would be, like, 60th.
Night, the beginning...
I'm sorry, I'm trying to do math in my head. 50th, the 50th
yes,
anniversary.
Thank you.
So 2030, 50th anniversary, get a prequel film about how Robin was actually a fucked up little kid and they did the world a favor.
I'll get her little ass out of the window.
This revisionist history of Prom Night.
Yeah, it would just make it deeper. But anyway, so that is how the film goes. And so they arrest some guy that they think is responsible for the death, put him away, these kids. This is very... I Know What You Did Last Summer, preschool edition.
Yes.
That's what this movie sets up. And so now all these years later, these kids are now and supposed to be 17, 16, 17, 18, somewhere in there, high school seniors, going to prom. And somebody who knows what they done did decides to take vengeance all these years later, randomly.
Yes, just
because prom night, that will be a good... I will wait these 7 years or whatever.
A dish best served cold. Revenge
this is true.
Is.
Yeah, and what I love this again, we're gonna really get into this movie. What I love is that they're getting these calls, and all of them keep acting like they have no idea what possibly could be motivating somebody to want to attack them. Mm-hmm. It's like they don't ever get together and discuss, really. Maybe in little, like, to themselves or whatever, but it's, oh yeah, I don't know why somebody is creepy and calling me and threatening me with something that happened in the past. I have no idea what that could mean. Mm-hmm. It's very weird.
Would have been, here's, all right, everybody, Joe redirects the episode, redirects the It would have been better if it was all random. If there was some like flashbacks of Alex and Kim. What's her name?
Jamie Lee Curtis's character, Kim. Older sister of Robin.
Yes.
Alex was the twin of the dead sibling.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it'd be like something like home movies of them with other kids or whatever. The tragedy, but then we don't know that the kids did that, and then we think it's random. That's the thing. It's like, it would be great if we were to believe until the very end that it was a random thing, because the foreshadowing and like I'm assuming to build tension of like them being targeted because of, you know, what they did not land at all for me,
because you have the guy escapes jail, so it's a bit of a red herring that you think they're being stalked. This is let's see, 1980, so this is 2 years after Halloween. Very much like a lot of this, it reminds me of Halloween, like the death of a child when they were young, guy goes to jail. It's also a little bit Nightmare on Elm Street in that the guy who does go to jail is actually innocent.
I thought he was a pedo. No, they say he's a pedo.
Wait, who are you saying?
The guy who escapes, right?
Improperly her. Again, it's such a mess of a movie. But we know somebody is in jail or has been put away for the death of Robin. But it's not the person who did it. Oh, but it is a sex offender blamed for her death. Has escaped from a psychiatric facility. There we go. So yeah, he is some kind of... Anyways, but he didn't kill her, obviously, because we know these children may or maybe did not.
These children, they walked.
Yeah, these are some really unaffected kids, too. Like, gosh, there you go, people. That's the 80s for you. Whatever. Let's all just never talk about this and go home.
Yeah, let's just never, ever talk about this.
And they say kids are fucked up these days. Look at this. Here we go.
Yeah. Kill.
So he's like a red herring. Like, you think it's him that he's picking them off. So I think we're supposed to be surprised at the end that it's actually her brother the whole time who has decided after all these years that, like, you know, he can't take it anymore, I guess, the knowledge, because it's his shadow. Like, at the beginning, we see somebody walk up and, like, the shadow, but we don't know who that is. Turns out to be the brother. Yeah, I don't know. It goes back to what you were saying earlier. Grief is a motherfucker. And that it's not linear. It just can cycle within us. And if we don't process it properly, I don't think we'll kill people. Bad
you
things
and
can
I,
happen.
Maybe, but.
But little Alex, little curly head Alex. Yeah, I know. It gets confusing. I actually confuse about who anybody. I'm not sure which kids are supposed to be who when they're older and younger.
Yeah.
And,
I'm having my phone out because I'm like, I need to make, I don't know these actors' names other than Jamie Lee and Liam Neeson.
Yeah, I don't
or
think.
Leslie Nielsen.
There we
but
go.
But I'm like, have my phone out because I'm just like, okay, who are the kids' names again? Because this is, it's a little unclear as to who's supposed to be whom. Plus, I get that's the style for to have feathered hair for a teen boy to have feathered hair like that, but you need to be a little bit more distinguishing. At least they gave the bully the same costume, right? They gave him the same black ringer t-shirt,
right? Yeah, he's what's his name? Lou. Yeah, Lou's easy to distinguish, but you're right, some of the other guys, it's a little, and again, the film, it's a little Vaseline-y looking.
It's serving season one of RuPaul's Drag Race for sure.
So there are definitely times that I stop and go, wait, who is that again? Is that the brother or the boyfriend?
I had to take a moment. I had to go back a couple times when the fight happens in the cafeteria because Lou is fighting Nick. No, he's fighting... Lou is fighting Alex because you're the principal's son.
Yeah.
And that's Leslie Nielsen.
Right.
And then immediately right after that, there's a scene with Nick and Jamie Lee talking about the prom and how he sounds like he's about to confess that he was one of the reasons why her sister died. But I was like, wait, they're together? I thought they were brother and sister.
I had the same problem a few times, like just remembering who was who because of that Tommy Ross hair that they all had. Yeah. But at least in Carrie, he's the only one that really has that hair, so it's easy to follow Lil William Cat around. Mm-hmm. it's hard to follow. I also didn't understand the dance sequence, like what? So they're working all hard on this and she's like doing choreography, and you have that asshole girl that's just like coming in, just being shady. And then you're like, I guess she wasn't wrong. Because when they do the scene, you're like, all of that, and that's the dance. It's so painful to watch. Yeah. Like, I would love to rewatch this movie with Jamie Lee Curtis. Like, I would just love to hear her commentary on it.
I feel like there needs to be, like, a Super Bowl commercial where Jamie Lee Curtis does the dance.
Does
sequence.
The dance from Prom Night.
She does a series of dances, right? Yeah. It could be about, like, Meetup or something like that. And that'll be, or Groupon. And then she does the dance from Prom Night, and then does her, like, striptease, but as, like, her now, her striptease from True Lies.
Ah, yeah.
And then there's also
that aerobic sequence.
The aerobic with John Travolta. Yes, we just all of those things.
Yes.
And, hi, I'm Academy Award winning actress Jamie Lee Curtis.
That would be amazing. But yeah, that it's just one of those confusing things in it. Because I don't, like, okay, I remember at prom that people that were on, like, the dance team and, like, the cheerleaders, like, because they always did, anybody involved in any of the performance sure. aspects mm-hmm. at school, we almost always did popular songs of the day that would inevitably be played at prom. And so you would go out and we would do the little choreography stuff.
Flash mob a little bit.
Yeah.
You would,
No, I've seen the poster, though, for it. That's okay. Where they take her glasses off.
Yes, she's pretty. Where they basically take her glasses off yeah. and wipe her face.
Yep.
There's a scene at the prom where Usher is the DJ, which I love. Everyone knows all of the dances to, like, the one song that was yeah. very famous at that time. Was it yeah. like that?
Exactly. But nobody was like, oh, I'm going to do a special choreographed dance at the prom. And I didn't know if it was because they were, like, going to be crowned prom king and queen, which also doesn't make sense that they knew that going in. Isn't that usually voted on at? I can't remember this. I went to prom 20 years ago, over 20 years ago, because I graduated in May of 2003. Yeah. So now we're in.
Oh.
September of 2023. So it was over 20 years ago that I went to prom. So I can't remember. I thought we voted during prom for the prom king and queen. It wasn't done before.
Typically, it's done before, so that way it's yeah, the whole thing.
That's true. But I guess I thought that the ballots were official on prom night. But oh, like it's like in Cary where they yeah. vote at the prom.
Yeah.
So it's like a surprise. Mm-hmm. Who knows? Maybe different places do it their own ways. But my point is just, like, is that why they're doing this dance sequence? Because I can't really remember in the movie if they even discuss it. She's just like, oh, I'm going to do this dance presentation during the prom.
Yeah.
And it's like a big deal. And then it's that.
Yeah.
And not even Jamie. She's giving it her all, kicking up. It's the yeah. guy.
She's doing white girl arms. Like, she's...
And all the students are standing around just staring, except there's one girl in, like, a beige dress who's, like, dancing, but everybody else is just... I'm like, yeah, that's probably what we would have done. If, yeah. like, the daughter of the principal did some kind of disco choreographed number stopping prom, yeah. and so we all had to watch... Yeah, I probably would have been like...
And it's so funny because not 5 years later, it won't be at prom, but it'll be at a Halloween dance. You get the Once Bitten dance sequence where it's pretty similar, where everyone's just standing.
Yeah. No, this is such a, like, boring prom at parks.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes yes. it looks like they're having fun and they're dancing, but then other times it's just like, this looks really miserable.
Yeah, I see. That's why
which
I
is what prom should be.
Greece was ahead of its time because it was a dance marathon, and by process of elimination, there were people who, like, couldn't dance anymore.
Right, and it made sense for them to be standing around looking yes. pissed. Yes. Whereas these people, I don't know. It's just, it's so strange. The soundtrack is also delightful because what I read was they filmed it using, like, popular songs of the time, I Will Survive and these other
disco hits, yeah.
hits, but then they couldn't really afford to have that music. So they brought in somebody who worked on Black Christmas and some other people to write, what do they call it, like, mock hits? Not mockbusters, but isn't there, like, a colloquialism for a fake hit song?
Oh.
It's the people who do that, like, for Daria. They go in mm-hmm. and they, like, recreate. Because they can't have the actual song, but they need something that still feels like it. Or Queer as Folk did that. If you ever watched Queer as Folk, because they used a lot of pop music as well at the time. But the series now, it's all fake stuff. I can't remember. I think there's, like, a term for it, but Anyways, point is somebody came in and recreated songs that sounded like those hits, which then resulted in a lawsuit.
Yes.
So fun.
Yeah, but
and you can hear it listening to the songs. I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, I could tell this sounds like this song, that sounds like that. But what are you gonna do?
Yeah, it's enough, right? It's parody, right?
Right. Yeah, I don't even know what you call that. It's we just need to have something that has the same kind of
it's
vibe.
Like the Kids Bop track.
Yeah. Oh, I hate that. Kids Bop songs are really terrifying sometimes. So I wanted us to watch this one again because it was like set at high school and I love movies that have like old teenagers.
Yes.
It just delights me. And again, this movie, I don't think that it is as influential as like Halloween, which is, I do think is the superior film just because this doesn't, I don't even care in the end. That's the other thing. By the time it's revealed who the murderer is, you're like, oh, whatever. Because the characters are a bit indistinguishable. I don't even know if Jamie Lee Curtis is necessary in the film. It's like, why did we make this outside of we just wanted to capitalize on her and Halloween? Because she did get paid. That's one thing that she liked about this movie. She got paid a hell of a lot more than she did to do Halloween. Yeah, and obviously Leslie Nielsen, they got them, convinced them to do the movie, and then it got made, I think, based on.
I was hoping he was going to be the killer.
If it, the whole time it was the dad.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would have made it interesting. I mean, it's not that it's not interesting that it's the brother, although this is a year before Halloween 2, which introduced the idea that Michael Myers, I believe that's what, because it wasn't in the original. It's
no,
in Halloween
it's
2.
Michael is
her like brother. So you have this movie that also did that. And she hits him with an axe in the head towards the end of prom night, which is something she also does in Halloween H2O. She chops Michael's head off with an axe, which of course then they retroactively changed to the paramedic driver that Michael had put his mask on him so he wasn't the real person. That was in Halloween Resurrection, which is why she's like in a psychiatric hospital at the beginning because of her grief and despair and have killed an innocent man wearing Michael's mask. But my point is that she attacks a brother with an axe.
The parallels.
Yes, they're like these lovely parallels here.
Can I tell you where my Fright School education really came in handy?
Oh, sure.
As I'm watching this, the second half where we're actually at prom night and the teens are being killed. Yeah.
I definitely think it has that vibe too. Also Canadian produced. I think some of the same people were involved. Again, trying to make it around like a slasher event or a slasher movie around an event like Christmas or Halloween. Why not prom night?
Sure.
Yeah. So it was just Christmas.
Yeah. I was like, this is like it. The similar lighting, the way that the kills were revealed, but also still held back. Do you know what I mean? Like it was just... It was like, okay, the conventions of the slasher we're starting to see motifs, right? We're starting to see the slasher be a visual language of what a slasher is in this that will generally remain the same until what? Scream? Maybe? Where would you say? No, actually, Nightmare. Nightmare on Elm Street would change it a little bit, but it also, it's Nightmare's just an original like concept and
because you're thinking of like point of view,
the lighting. It felt like it was the same cinematographer, like the same director of photography in some parts.
Yeah. I don't know, because obviously we still have like the heyday of the slasher between the late 70s and like the early 80s or 80s in general. Yeah, this movie is definitely taking advantage of the things that were successful in Halloween and successful in Black Christmas and Psycho, just to take it all the way back and even further. There are other movies that kind of did those sorts of point of view shots. So and things that we have identified with the slasher film.
Sure.
It's not as successful, but I think it's fun in some ways. Parts of it drag. I do like it's a mood. It's another one of these movies that's fun to just put on in the afternoon that I'm going to maybe take a nap or something, like put on prom night. I was trying to look because there was something. The one thing that I will say is that even though there are like these rules to like slasher movies, they don't always follow that. Because, for instance, is it Kelly, I think, Kelly and her boyfriend, like, he's trying to get her to have sex, and she won't.
Yeah.
She rejects him, and then she immediately dies after.
Yes.
Which is a little playing with that, like, mm-hmm. where this movie isn't about what a lot of slasher movies are about, where it's like this unknown force that's coming into a suburban place and wreaking havoc on teenagers who are doing bad things. It's not this morality play in the general sense like that Halloween is. This mm-hmm. is more, this is a revenge story in the end.
Yeah.
It's a story more about
grief.
Grief. And yeah, exactly. Before we really were talking about things like that, like we are now in films, where we're really much more, I think, cognizant of those kinds of themes. So you have a brother who's really tortured by the death of his twin sister, which when we think about relationships of siblings, twins have unique relationships often. So there is that. Yeah, it's so my point is that some of the deaths in the movie don't follow the usual have sex, die, do mm-hmm. drugs, die. This is about revenge, and you're right, grief hasn't gone away. And the family, because when the film starts after that sequence with Robin's death, the family goes every year to visit her and memorialize. So there is a ritual. I think it's not, the family has been processing it the best they can, but obviously sure. Alex is not, it's not enough for Alex. He wants to see everybody pay. Yeah. Let's see. I was just looking at this. There was the slasher genre in Prom Night, which kind of uses, I was looking up, interestingly, Clover does not mention this film, or at least it's not in the index for Men, Women, and Chainsaws. But there is still kind of discussion about, obviously Kim ends up being like a final girl, although in Clover, this is what I was trying to say. One could argue that Kelly would be a far more appropriate final girl in accordance with Clover, with how she defines it, because she experiences sexual reluctance. She is the last child to swear secrecy, stating, "I don't want to go to jail," reinforcing her apartness from her friends. She is the first to die, however. It's a different, it's like already Prom Night was attempting to subvert like a trope of the genre,
sure.
which I do think is interesting. I think if there's anything in this movie that we can look at within like the context of like academic horror, I do think it's interesting that she dies first after being the one that's, she's not any less guilty than the others, but she isn't participating.
She's the more innocent of the, I hate to say that because they're all guilty, but she's the one who's, like you said, reluctant.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a playing with that. And then in the end, it's still Jamie Lee Curtis who survives to the end.
Sure.
Although, again, in what state? Because she's lost another sibling. So it's a dark ending, her having to kill her own brother without knowing it until the very end of the movie when she sees his eyes and I know who it is.
I feel like at the end. Right.
I love that. All right. I don't know. Did you have any other notes or anything about the movie? They remade it in 2008 with a very, I think, 2008 cast.
Yes.
But in a lot of ways, a very different movie.
Yeah.
Not at all the same story, I don't think. I haven't seen that movie in a long time, but it's about, I don't think it starts with the death of a child either. It's like a totally different.
He's killer.
He's obsessed with her.
He's obsessed with her.
Yeah.
He kills him. Yeah. Trying to try it.
Yeah. So it's just a complete reinvention of the story, just using the same. Yeah. I haven't seen that in so long. I remember thinking there were parts of it that were creepy, though. And I need those kinds of discussions. Like, we live in this world where this conversation of like men stalking women, the obsession mm-hmm. of mm-hmm. violence is like still so relevant and meaningful to discuss. So I don't know. It'd be interesting to rewatch the 2008 version and compare it to this and to ongoing films in the slasher genre and how they continue to reflect like real world fear and anxiety. Alrighty, that's enough of this. We gleaned what we could. This is another good popcorn night movie. Get together with friends, jeer at it. See if you can recreate those dance moves.
Oh gosh, yes. I think that we need to do a remake of this, but mm-hmm. instead of at prom night, it'll be some other thing in the calendar. So like homecoming or Tea Prep, the summer, the spring musical, parent teacher conference night.
Put a slasher in there just for fun.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Same everything, but just at PTA night.
Yeah. Yeah. PTA night, we're going to have a disco presentation by one of the students for no reason.
That would be a great disco because then it'd be underwater.
There we go. Some merman dancers or whatever. Mm. Okay. That's enough of that. Thank you for listening to this. As always, Joe.
Joshua.
You're delightful. Good night.
Good night. Fright School is produced by Joshua Napier and Joe Farron.
Our intro was edited by Davey Boy Productions.
Our logo was designed by Jamie Channel Guzman.
Episodes are edited and engineered by Joe Farron.
Fright School is produced in terrifyingly beautiful San Diego, California.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.